Welcome to another podcast from Commercial Investment Real Estate, the award-winning magazine of the CCIM Institute. I'm Rich Rossfelder. Today I'm discussing the multifamily market with Todd Clark, CEO of NM Apartment Advisors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Todd, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Rich. It's always a pleasure to get to do things for the CCIM Institute.
One thing is clear, multifamily is hot right now. What investment trends are you seeing in your market that might be reflected in other secondary markets?
It's a really good question. I think there's probably two trends that are true in most markets across the country. The first is increasing demand driven by the two largest demographic groups in our country, being the baby boomers and the Gen Ys. And in the Gen Ys case, they have very specific needs that the multifamily industry meets. And in the baby boomers, it's kind of a changing need that we've not seen before. And then I think the second is increasing access to capital pretty much across the board, no matter what market you're in. So long as it's an apartment community, there's an abundance of financing that I've not seen since 2007, probably.
And what types of investors are coming into your market looking for multifamily property?
I would say for the most part, it's been very similar to what we've seen over the last decade. Not as many institutional buyers. Those buyers, I think, in the early 2000s started having a trend of moving to the coastal markets and leaving the Midwest, the Southwest, and a lot of the other markets in between open for the regional investors. So we've got a number of them that come from all the way from Chicago, all the way across to California. But I think the one thing that's probably changed the most dramatically is we're missing that Californian investor. While they're still out there, they're just not out there in the abundance that we were seeing in the mid-2000s.
And that said, how are you capitalizing on the increased demand for apartments?
Well, I can tell you the two different answers for this one. As an apartment broker, and this is, I think, my 24th year in the industry, we've really been able to identify who the renters are and help our developer clients with development consulting using the CCIM 102 market analysis skills to reposition either existing assets that they're buying and renovating, or more than likely to help them position new properties that they're bringing to market to meet this kind of generational demand. And I think the more exciting of the two is probably the Gen Y millennial group. The baby boomers is certainly interesting, but I think they're not entirely sure what they're looking for, and it's evolving over time. So mostly it's to help our developer clients move the product that they have to where the demand is. And in my market, I can tell you that's a really wide open market. The typical multifamily deal in Albuquerque was built in 65. It's two-story. It's red brick. It's pitched roof. It was built master metered, facing inward around the community amenity, the swimming pool or shuffleboard or whatever they had, and it was built furnished. And none of those things are on the list of what the baby boomers or particularly the Gen Ys are looking for. And so I think we're going to see some really exciting times, and that so much of our product needs to be replaced. You know, skipping for a moment how old it is, it's not at all what the market's looking for. And then the existing clients is to help them recognize as they start forecasting, you know, the next 10 years of their ownership, how does their product fit in? How does their location fit in? We've got a number of initiatives locally where we're looking at upping the density, particularly along transit corridors, to make it feasible for those owners to sell or redevelop their own property and take advantage of higher densities, which makes the land worth about the same as the apartments today, and reposition their product in, I think, a really exciting way.
You mentioned Generation Y. How are apartment owners and developers modifying properties to attract this segment of renters?
Well, it's a fabulous question. I think just incredibly interesting. My perception is that apartment owners and developers, as it relate to Gen Y, fall into three categories. The first one is they're in total denial. They're continuing to do things and plan to do things for the next 10 years like they've done them for the last 10 years. And I think that's a gigantic mistake. If you look at, and I'll give you some specific examples. If you look at Gen Y, they've had a lifetime of clicking on those universal licensing agreements that you get when you install software from iTunes to Microsoft's Office. Nobody ever reads them. Nobody spends any time on them. And they don't give a lot of thought to them. And I think they feel exactly the same way about apartment leases. And because of federal requirements for lead-based paint and for, you know, other fair housing and things like that, these leases have become very long in nature. And the generation before Gen Y would sit and read truly every word and ask questions. Gen Y feels like, well, that's just like a universal license agreement. I just want to click here and keep on going. And I think the landlord who can – so that was that kind of that first one. That first group that's, I think, in denial of where they are, and they're not doing anything to appeal to Gen Y. And that same generation is the generation of video games. And in video games, they get constant, continual feedback. And so they're used to hearing from whoever they're interacting with some kind of feedback. And so they're not getting that, I think, from this first group. The second group understands that there's a generational difference, but I think believes, and these are typically the baby boomer landlords, they believe that, well, this generation will come around when they have kids, and they will change and be like the rest of us. But I think there's a couple of problems with that. The first one is the baby boomers were the radical generation. They were the generation that protested in the 60s and had free love and everything else. And they have come to realize how much their how much change they've gone through, and they've evolved as time has gone on. And they seem unwilling to acknowledge that their grandkids, these millennial generations, fall into that same group, and that they may not conform in any respect any more than the baby boomers conform to what the greatest generation's expectations were of them. So this second group, they understand that the generational folks are different, and they're catering to them in small ways. They're making sure that they've got USB ports that, you know, charge their devices built into a lot of the outlets in the kitchen areas or maybe the bedrooms. They're offering internet because they understand that's important. But again, they're just making these modest changes, and I think often touting that they've, you know, really hit it. And it's the third group that I think has really nailed it. And I haven't seen anybody execute it perfectly, but it's this third group that understands that Gen Y lives out of a backpack. The baby boomers had a lifetime of collecting things physically in the analog world. Gen Y has a much smaller lifetime of collecting things only in a digital world. Everything they care about exists in their iPad or their netbook or in the cloud, whether it's photos that they've collected from their trips, their music collection, their movie collection, their game high scores, all of that's contained digitally, which means they can really live out of a backpack, and they need a lot less space. And that's probably the biggest rub right now for this third group, is that the lending capital markets have not moved to acknowledge that. There's been this ongoing trend from the 80s all the way up to about 2000 of bigger is better, reflecting where the baby boomers were. Let's have more, you know, larger apartments. And we're finding right now the largest demand is really in those smaller units. And again, in that third group, they're doing other things. They're really paying attention to the colors. They're paying attention to the values that Gen Y says are important to them. And it's really interesting when you look at the value surveys of what baby boomers talk about as important to them and what Gen Y talks about, it's like you asked them entirely different questions. And so we're seeing a lot of these apartments that are having good success focus on different surfaces, different textures. They definitely need to be green friendly. And I think that means more than a token nod to, well, we're going to give you a recycling bid, but expect to be grilled by this generation as to what is your company's philosophy and how do you feel about these things? Because we feel like as we're paying you rent, that we're either supporting you in your initiatives, or if we choose not to, we're not going to support you. And the last one that I've not seen really executed well in this group is there's going to have to be some kind of balancing act between the need to execute these long documents and what this generation expects. And I don't expect it to be as simple as here's a QR code, sign it. But I do expect that we're going to see a lot more simplification of leases. Southwest Airlines is probably the perfect example of that. Whenever you look at any of their legalese kind of things, they sprinkle it with interesting, fun tidbits, or just, you know, they even say, gosh, here's what we're trying to say, but here's what the attorneys made us say. And I think we're going to see a big change in a lot of the legal documents. And that means our judiciary system's going to have to change a little bit and recognize these. And I don't think most of the apartment landlords and developers are there yet today. They just understand this generation's different, and here's what we're going to do to cater to them, but they don't understand how different they are, because everything in their world is digital. It's always had a world with Google. They're almost entirely paperless. And so I think that's probably the most exciting thing, or the things that are still to come to make this generation even more comfortable. And I'll give you one more if we have time for it, and that is they are the rental generation on everything. They really don't understand the need to do a long document. Why can't I just give you my credit card, you give me the space, and we consider it done? Because that's what they do for everything else. And we've already seen surveys nationally that they're the first generation that's not going to have a car for every single person. So that's going to have a dramatic impact in what we see in ridership and mass transit, a desire to be in transportation-oriented design product, being in urban centers where they can walk and eat and go to the grocery store and the drugstore and all those kind of places. But it's also going to be a big culture shock for the car industry, because they've always depended on a generation that comes and associates freedom with ownership of the car.
And another thing that we might consider emblematic of this generation is social media. And I know at the recent CCIM Live conference, you gave a presentation on marketing through social media. What role does social networking play in your multifamily marketing plan?
This is, I think, very interesting and continually evolving. If you had the Wild West of today's decade, it would definitely be on Facebook, and not so much the kind of the stingy LinkedIn, but definitely on Facebook and Twitter. And we're seeing things evolve, you know, at a microseconds pace. Where we used to see things evolve over days or weeks or months. And I think a good example of that is this generation. One member of it recently got in trouble during the Hurricane Sandy for tweeting irresponsible things, that the Wall Street was underwater, that a number of other things that had happened in New York. And I'm sure in his case he thought it was cute and funny, but because of so many people turned to social media today, it was treated with a great deal of seriousness. And in fact, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning about the fact that this guy has been fired from where he worked for his actions. And it'll be interesting to see if New York decides to pursue him under that same kind of, you know, yelling fire in a movie theater deal. So I mention all of that because there aren't a lot of established policies or laws for this. And lacking that, a lot of people who are responsible for executing a multifamily marketing plan feel very uncomfortable in this arena. And so they fall into two camps. And one of them is, we're not doing anything. Or they think that Craigslist is really, you know, social media. And certainly Craigslist has been a game changer as it relates to marketing apartments, because they're not spending that money in the apartment guide for rent or any of the classifieds or the apartment magazines. But I think that the second group understands that you can't just give a tip to social media and say, well, we've done that. We've got a Facebook page for our apartment and we're done. And the reason for that is twofold. The first one is, if you do that, what I have seen, and you mentioned the CCIM Live conference and the class we have for CCIM on this, in the longer version of the class, we spend quite a bit of time looking at things that people have done that doesn't work well and is kind of counterproductive to what you're trying to accomplish. And I use a lot of apartment management companies or apartment pages as an example of that, because what you'll see is this older managerial generation who probably has got a Facebook account but hasn't spent much time on it. And they've got this new young generation of managers or leasing agents who are really excited and gung-ho, and they feel like, well, they're just going to take care of it. I don't have to worry about it. But what they don't realize is what's going on that page and the kind of conversations that are being had and the liability and legal issues it brings up. So we spend quite a bit of time in the course working towards what's your social media policy and something that can be understood whether you yourself are on Facebook or you're not. And then the second group, I think, understands that they need to adopt this as part of everything they do. When they have some new change in the community, that it doesn't just wait for the next month's newsletter to be hand-delivered by the maintenance staff, but it's tweeted out, it's put on their Facebook page, it's put on their website, it's put everywhere. And I think that brings in to the fold the conversation about what kind of tools are you using, because it takes quite a bit of time. I was just out on site at a brand new community in our Sawmill Old Town neighborhood and talking to the manager, and she said almost all of their leads, and it's a very edgy industrial live work kind of product, really cool, but all of their leads were coming either through Craigslist or social media. And we got to, well, how much time are you spending on this? And the answer was they were spending so much time they really felt like they had to outsource it and they needed to find new tools and make somebody responsible for that, or they were hiring a company who would take this over and they'd say, here's what we have. Can you integrate this into all of the things that we're doing? And I think some of the best tools for using that are things like TweetDeck, where you can monitor, where you can not only post to all of your different places that you want to do it, like Twitter and Tumblr and Facebook and your website and your blog and your WordPress, but also tools like that allow you to measure what people are talking about. So, for example, and I haven't seen a community execute this 100% flawlessly, but if they can get their tenants engaged in the conversation, then in TweetDeck, you can create a silo that says, this is this community's tenants, and here's what they're talking about today. Here's the top 10 hashtags or meta tags of what they're focused on and can care about. And that's an excellent tool, not only to guide you into what should you next be focused on, but also what can you do to minimize any damage to your community. If you go out in the multifamily industry today and ask them, what's your biggest issue in marketing? I think what you hear from them are the negative feedbacks and reviews they get from websites that are pretty much created and made by disgruntled tenants to upset their landlords. And a lot of this, there's no ability to verify it. There's no ability to tell if it's true. It's not an eBay feedback rating where the landlord also gets to say, well, yeah, that's all true, but the tenant, you know, was 90 days late and trashed the apartment. And so I think they're starting to understand that if they can move the conversation from this static website that's full of negativity, you rarely see positive reviews on anything, to a social media component where you can see, yeah, that landlord messed up, but here's the things they did to take corrective action, and here were the responses from their tenant and the tenant base, and the tenants were happy. And I think that's still the stuff that we're waiting to see in the near future.
Todd, thanks again for talking with us today.
Oh, Rich, it's always a pleasure. Have a great day.
Todd Clark shares more of his thoughts with CIRE readers in the article Apartment Hunters, which appears in the November-December issue of CIRE Magazine. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, send an email to magazine@ccim.com. For more information on CIRE, the award-winning magazine of the CCIM Institute, visit ccim.com.